Good morning. I'm very excited to be presenting here at this race, stigma, and mental health session. The title of my presentation is Sociocultural Elements in Healthcare for People with Serious Mental Illness. I have no relationships to disclose. I'd like to thank our funding source, the New York State Office of Mental Health, and also our research team, and also our consultants. So I'm going to begin with the background and public health significance of health disparities among people with serious mental illness. I'm going to go through our methods and our results, which will include an overview of a conceptual model of service integration with illustrative examples. And then I'm going to go through a discussion and implication section. There's a public health crisis among people living with SMI. People living with SMI die on average 25 years earlier than the general population. This is due to preventable medical conditions such as diabetes, obesity, and metabolic syndrome, suboptimal medical care, and this is worsened by the side effects of psychotropic medications. So people with racial and ethnic minority status are at greater risk than non-Hispanic whites for health disparities in health and healthcare, and this burden is even greater among the population, among people with SMI that also have racial and ethnic minority status. For example, African Americans and Hispanics with SMI have higher rates of obesity, diabetes, and other metabolic risk factors, are at elevated risk for cardiovascular disease, have lower access to high quality care, are disproportionately enrolled in fragmented health services, and are less likely to have access to and enroll in healthy lifestyle programs. An illustrative example of this is in 2005, when analyzing data from the Clinical Antipsychotic Trial on Intervention Effectiveness, also known as the Katie Schizophrenia Study, Nasrallah and colleagues found that people with schizophrenia were less likely to be receiving care for diabetes and dyslipidemia. This was particularly evident among women of color with schizophrenia compared to white men with schizophrenia. So the poor health of people with SMI that also have racial and ethnic minority status, it requires the development of culturally competent strategies when providing wellness initiatives within the public mental health system. This is because culture influences health beliefs and behaviors. And by culture, I'm referring to a shared system of understanding that shapes and is in turn shaped by experiences. It's a social process that exists in interactions between people and their environment. This can include socioeconomic status, poverty, the availability of health services. Culture shapes how we think. It's our emotions and social norms. It's also important that culture is dynamic and it varies from person to person. And from medical anthropology and cross-cultural studies, we know that culture influences health, mental health, and healthcare services at multiple levels of the system. For example, culture shapes how people perceive, define, and label illness. It shapes ideas regarding body image, dietary practices, and relationships with foods. And it also influences patient-provider interactions because it shapes expectations and the preferences that each member of the clinical encounter brings to the encounter. And it also shapes how patients interact with the healthcare system. However, little is known about the provision of culturally competent medical care to racial and ethnic minorities with SMI. And few have studied the provision of culturally competent physical health care within specialty mental health settings. In fact, a recent literature review of lifestyle interventions showed that in 30 years of research, only one study has evaluated a culturally adapted lifestyle intervention that analyzed by racial and ethnic group and a language group. So therefore, culture has not been fully integrated into health promotion programs for people living with SMI. And studying the provision of health services in a mental health setting is important for this population because people with SMI, they're a group that visits their mental health setting frequently, if not daily, and they're also not having their health needs met elsewhere. So therefore, we also had a public health approach to our study, recognizing that individuals who are most in need of services are likely to face multiple practical and cultural barriers in accessing and engaging with those services. in this case, health services for SMI population. So in recognition of this gap, we conducted a qualitative study to inform the development of a culturally competent model that can integrate physical health care services into mental health settings. The aims of our study were to examine the sociocultural elements in provision and coordination of physical health services in mental health organizations that serve African American and Latino consumers with SMI. And another aim was to develop a conceptual framework and provide targets for informing the integration of health services in mental health settings. We use a purposive sample of 6 community-based mental health organizations that serve 3 northern Manhattan communities. This purposive sampling is a non-probability sampling technique that is commonly used in qualitative research. And its goal is to find diverse key informants that meet different criteria and are expert in different areas. So each of these organizations served a large number of racially and ethnically diverse consumers, but provided different kinds of mental health services. There was outpatient, there was assertive community treatment, we even had a clubhouse. And each of these settings received different funding streams as well. And because each setting was different, we also had to use different strategies when approaching different organizations. So we used a multi-stakeholder approach. We spoke with consumers, providers, and administrators, and we used mixed methods. We collected interviews, interview data, focus groups, participant observation, as well as surveys. And our analytical strategy followed the tenets of qualitative research and was rooted in grounded theory, involved coding, consensus, co-occurrence, and comparison. And we ensured rigor of our study through member checks, which is bringing our findings back to each organization to make sure that we were understanding the story right and weren't missing anything major, through triangulating information, through focus groups and surveys, making sure we got the right, we were hearing the same thing over and over, consulting with experts, and leaving an audit trail. So onto the results. Administrators were mostly white, a little over half female, and most often had a background in psychiatry. Clinicians were mostly Hispanic or white, and most frequently of a social work background. For consumers, average age was 50, a little over half female, mostly Hispanic or African American, and many with limited English proficiency, often disabled and often usually living on a limited income. So using the themes that emerge from our data, we developed this conceptual framework that can inform the integration of health services into mental health settings. The sociocultural elements exist at multiple levels. At the organizational level, there is the social context in which services are provided, and this context determines the rest. Provider factors included professional boundaries, stigma towards and bias against people with SMI. Consumer provider factors included deference to authority, which in our data was described as a result of a historical legacy of mistrust and racism. And the consumer factors included varying body image ideals, effects of living in a particular neighborhood environment, and self-blame for living an unhealthy lifestyle. So now I'm going to briefly illustrate certain examples of each level of this model and sort of explain their relationship with each other. So the organizational social context, it's the model of service delivery that shapes the expectations and attitudes of clinic staff and determines the feasibility of integration efforts. So each organization had its own ethos, which shaped the identity of the organization and how they interact with the consumers. So some service delivery models were less conducive to service integration. According to one clubhouse administrator, "For me, it would be straying from the dynamic of the program, so I would not encourage service integration here. We're concerned about you, but it's not so much a clinical program." So therefore, the clubhouse settings, this administrator kind of demonstrated that integrating care sort of went against the clubhouse ethos and changes the dynamic of the program. So integrating this new practice in this setting, according to this administrator and others, it sort of threatened this organization's ability to best serve clients. So this organizational ethos trickled down into the providers and really influenced provider attitudes. Providers described a sense of ambivalence towards providing services that are not usually part of their profession. So these professional boundaries, in this case, include the management of physical health needs of their patients. So according to a clinician in an outpatient setting, having therapists step outside their role and get actively involved in the nitty-gritty of their healthcare, I wouldn't want to be the one staring over their shoulder to see if they lost or gained a pound. A lack of physical health training was also connected to this ambivalence. For example, some of the psychiatrists in our study were trained in medicine decades earlier. Another element that fed into this sense of professional boundaries was that there wasn't a protocol to be followed, which made it difficult to adopt a new strategy. There was also a tipping point at which mental health providers were willing to step outside their boundaries in an urgent situation. So according to this day program psychiatrist, I think in milder cases, we need to do a better job, but in serious cases, we work hard to help. Another psychiatrist described an example in which she successfully advocated for a patient with SMI to receive a heart transplant, which is an intervention that patients with SMI are normally excluded from. So at the consumer provider level, patients described how a history of racism created mistrust in the medical establishment. So in light of the advocacy efforts on the mental health side, consumers in our study described having a good rapport with their mental health providers, but the mistrust resulted from the physical health side. So this results in patients entering the medical encounter on the medical side and the physical health side defensive and guarded. So according to this patient, I get what I need to get and that's it. I outfox the fox. You can be arrogant, you can be racist. I don't care as long as you don't disrespect me. So this quote illustrates how this sense of mistrust can interfere with patients sharing key medical information in the clinical encounter. So finally, at the patient level, even if physical health services were routinely provided in the mental health setting, there would be other issues of cultural competence to address. For example, body image was an issue that was frequently discussed across patient and provider levels when talking about health and wellness. Patients described how having a fuller figure was a sign of good health and beauty, whereas this quote from a clinician is from a clinician who sort of sees this body image ideal and kind of wrongfully describes it as being obese. So it really illustrates a disagreement on what constitutes health. And this is important because these cultural norms regarding body image could inadvertently create resistance to losing weight and engaging in healthy lifestyle changes. So to recap, sociocultural elements impact healthcare at multiple levels. These elements are central to the integration of health and mental health for people with SMI. Integration efforts must fit organizational culture and as well as professional boundaries. So there's also a need to focus on training providers on how to identify and kind of work with consumers' mistrust through culturally competent communication skills, and making sure that they're on the same page as far as cultural variations and body image ideals are concerned, the goal of the health intervention is health and not necessarily thinness. Our limitations, this study has limited generalizability due to the primarily Dominican and African American patient sample. This study was conducted in one urban area on the East Coast, and causal inferences cannot be made because this was not a longitudinal study. And finally, just to kind of bring it home with the importance of sociocultural elements when adapting interventions, Cultural competence should really be embedded in physical health care in addition to mental health, and future research should examine the effectiveness of culturally tailored physical health interventions in mental health settings. And I think I will stop there for today.